As we normally recite in the prayers of Lamrim, with great effort from now on, may I put effort in the teachings of the Buddha, and that the teachings of the Buddha may be prevail and flourish to all parts of the world. And with the blessings of the Buddha and through his teachings, may we be able to attain the Buddhahood at the soonest time. Also in life, until I reach that point, may Manjugosha look after me with loving kindness. May I find the supreme path complete in the stages of teaching. So in order to generate such a kind of mind, of course, it may take many lives. So therefore, we have to pray that the Manjugosha look after us. And during all those times, we have to utilize our time in the sincere practices, and with sincere practices, and we have to, it will be a kind of a real offering to the Manjugosha and the masters. So first, it is important that we ourselves have to practice and engage in the practice as it is stated. So through the practices, even though it may not be able to generate a genuine understanding about everything, but whatever understanding you have generated, as it is said. So whatever the understandings you have generated yourself through that power, may you be able to benefit the whole sentient beings. So with a great extraordinary intent and through the mind that wish to benefit others, so in that way one should be dedicate or generate or strive to benefit other sentient beings as much as possible. And as I have stated before, the two commentary texts of Lamrim teachings, so all those people who are able to, there are many kinds of people who are able to attend this teaching but may not be able to attend the next teaching. So during this teaching, the three sets of teaching, the great treatise, the middle and the short teaching, and also the lamp for the path to enlightenment will be completed. And also you have a text to read this time. So from now on, as I have requested before, so try to take that text whatever possible to wherever you go, and whenever you get time, you have to read it and think about it and contemplate. So in 1 year, that 12 months, so within that 12 months, of course, there will be possible that there may be some changes in your mind. So if this continues for another 10 years or one decade, two decades or three decades, so gradually there will be a transformation in your mind. So therefore, everybody must try to follow in this way. So first, I will complete the remaining part of the lamp for the path to enlightenment. The remaining part of the lamp for the path to enlightenment by Adisha. I think we are on the stanza 56, verse number 56. Is the verse number 58? I'm not having ascertained through scripture and through reasoning that phenomena are not produced, not inherently existent, meditate without conceptuality. So till here, the engaging in the practice of the path is completed. So from now on here, after gaining the mystical attainments, so with those attainments, how one should able to attain the path of enlightenment. Having thus meditated on suchness, eventually after reaching heat and so forth, the very joyful and others are attained long before the enlightened state of Buddha. So in order to attain such kind of the Buddhahood, it is very important that we practice or engage in the conditions and the causes. And the causes and conditions which is within us, to which will produce the Lord Buddha, which will produce the state of Buddhahood, is actually very clearly evident only in the tantric practices. So not only you have the conditions and the necessary things in order to attain the Buddhahood, but eventually whatever you have at this moment, whatever the facilities and the things you have, one must be able to benefit at the other. So the stanza number 61, if you wish to create with us the collections for enlightenment through activities of pacification, increase and so forth, gained by the power of mantra and also through the force of the eight and other great attainments like the good board. So such kind of the pacification and the other practices are actually evident in the lower tantric vehicles. But as we stated that to engage in the practice of bodhisattva, to generate the mind of bodhicitta is the door to the practice of bodhisattva. Similarly, in tantric also, the entrance is to please your master. If you want to practice stanza number 62, if you want to practice secret mantra as explained in action and performance tantras, then to receive the preceptor initiation, you must please an excellent spiritual teacher. So in the highest yoga tantra, the initiations are of four types. And in order to clean the purification of body, the various initiations and also the wisdom initiations and so forth. So the fourth initiation, which will produce the Buddha, the union of the Buddhahood, which is the words initiation. And through the fourth initiation, the path or the mental continuum to be ripened, there are two types, the general stage and the complete stage. And in the complete stages, there are again two types, the mother and the father lineages. And it is through the third initiation, the wisdom initiation. And these two, the complete stages of the fourth initiations, to in order to have such attainments, the gross and the rough levels of the mental has to be eliminated, and it has to be able to dissolve in the subtle form of the mental continuum. So in order to have such an attainments, the kind of clear light, the luminous mind, in order to have the main mind, it's important that we have the example one first. So in order to have such attainments, so it is important that we have the practice of the highest yoga tantra. The gross level of the breath and the wind has to be dissolved, and it is actually referred as the speech. So through the secret substances, it is very important to practice those secret practices. So even at the time of attaining the fourth, attaining these attainments, even through the luminous mind of registering the sleeping state, if the practitioner is someone who is the attainments and realizations of during the sleeping time, then they may not be able to depend so much on the other necessities. As Hirup Norsung Gyatso is one of them. So the exterior different kinds of mudras and is necessary, but it is not the same for all the practitioners. So such a kind of empowerment, initiation, the to practice according what has been written as per the evident in the text. When verse number 65, if those observing the austere practice of pure conduct wait to hold these initiations, their vow of austerity will be impaired through doing what which is prescribed. This creates the transgressions which are a defeat for those observing discipline, since they are certain to fall to a bad rebirth, they will never gain accomplishment. Verse number 67, there is no fault if one who has received the precept of initiation has knowledge of suchness, listens to or explains the tantras, and performs burnt offering rituals, or makes offerings of gifts and so forth. I alter the Dibam Karashri has seen it explained in sutras and other teachings. I have made this concise explanation at the request of Janjavu. This concludes the lamp for the path to enlightenment by great master Dibam Karashri Jana. It was translated, revised, and finalized by the eminent Indian abbot himself and by the great reviser, translated and fully ordained monk Givya Lodre. So here, this completes the lamp for the path to enlightenment text. And after that, the great treatise Lamrim Chimo, where on page number 320, how to eliminate obscurations by becoming accustomed to those views. After you have seen that the self and that which belongs to the self, like even the slightest particle of intrinsic nature, you can accustom yourself to these facts, thereby stopping the Dhirudala. View of the perishing aggregates as the self and that which belongs to the self. When you stop that view, you will stop the four types of grasping that holds on to what you want, etc. Explained earlier, when you stop this existence conditioned by attachment will not augur, hence there will be an end to the rebirth of aggregates conditioned by existence. You will attain liberation. Nagarjuna's fundamental treatise says, because of the pacification of self and that which the self owns, the conception I and the conception mind will be gone. And when thoughts of self and that which belongs to the self are extinguished in regard to internal and external things, grasping will stop. Through its extinction, birth will be extinguished. Accordingly, since grasping is an affliction and potential existence is karma, you are liberated through extinguishing the causes of birth. That is karma and afflictions. Nagarjuna's fundamental treatise says, through extinguishing karma and afflictions, there is liberation. As for the extinction through which karma and afflictions are extinguished, that same passage continues. Karma and afflictions arise from misconceptions. These misconceptions arise from elaborations. These elaborations are stopped by emptiness. That is, the cycle flow of birth and death arises from karma. Only physical, verbal, and mental compulsion activity associated with an afflicted mind constitute karma that establishes cyclic existence. His Holiness refers to the stanza above. These elaborations are stopped by emptiness, so there are two ways of explaining this. Continue reading. Afflictions that are rooted in the refined view of the perishing aggregates do not arise without the operation of misconceptions that superimpose upon objects signs such as pleasant and unpleasant. This affliction suggests attachment and hostility rooted in the refined view of the perishing aggregates are produced from such misconceptions. These misconceptions operate mistakenly only by clinging to the notion this is real in regard to the eight worldly concerns, or man and woman, or pot, cloth, form, or feeling. Since it is these misconceptions that conceive those objects, they are generated from the elaboration of conceptions of true existence. Chandrakriti's clear word says, emptiness, viewing all things as emptiness, stops all worldly elaborations. Why? Because when you see something as real, there are going to be elaborations such as those explained. Insofar as daughter of a barren woman is not seen, the last fool will not engage in elaborations with her as the object. When elaborations are not operating, their object is not going to be misconceived. As misconceptions are not operating, afflictions rooted in refined view of the perishing aggregates are not generated through clinging to I and mind. As afflictions rooted in the refined view of the perishing aggregates are not generated, actions are not performed. Those who do not perform actions will not experience cyclic existence, which is called birth, aging, and death. Chandrakriti's clear verse also states very clearly how knowing emptiness stops those elaborations and misconceptions. Why it is like this? Emptiness is not elaborated insofar as it is the character of thoroughly quelling elaboration. Since it is not elaborated, it stops misconceptions. When we are clear of all the wrong perceptions, so then in the reality, we only have the ultimate nature of reality itself. Other than there, there is nothing existing. So the object to which we feel desire and attachment arises, so that kind of object, if you look from the perspective as it is not, it does not have as a real reality from its nature, then of course naturally those attachment and desire will automatically cease. Stopping karma and affliction stop birth. Therefore, since only emptiness has the character of stopping all elaboration, it is called nirvana. So through this, we have to even do the introduction of Buddhism. So just through the history and through the history, it is not enough. So even if you look at the temples and the constructions, we can never compete with the Christian churches and Muslims. A few years back, I went to I cannot remember clearly now. I went to a Jain temple. They consider it very precious. And the Jain's master, so they first cleanse the body of the master, similar to what we have for the purification. First offering the substances and then also cleaning, then roughing and drying off. So it's very similar to our rituals. And after that, they offer a kind of ritual head. So when they do the cleaning, they use the milk to clean it. Then they offer a religious head, and they requested me to do that. And I pray, and I at that time I pray that through the Jain's master and teachings, of course, a lot of sentient beings and disciples has been benefited, even though the view and the philosophy may be right or it may be correct or not, but of course it's been able to benefit a lot of sentient beings. So I think the head is actually from silver, but it's really a very poor standard. I thought that the one we have in Lhasa is much, much better than that. So at that time, we, the Buddhists, especially that the ornaments that we normally offer to the Jewish statue in Tibet, the Tibetan government at that time offered one, and those designs with the natural precious stones, and so it's very precious and very, so compared to that, the one they offer is very poor standard. So anyway, so as it explained here, then we can realize that the teachings of Buddha is very unique and extraordinary. So if one able not able to have this understanding, then it is different. So I normally, when I speak about the introduction of Buddhism, so I meant these teachings. This passage proves that the view of emptiness is the root of cyclic existence and is the heart of the path of liberation. Hence, you must gain firm certainty about this. Accordingly, the treatise of the noble master Nagarjuna clearly stated even Sarvakas and Pratigya Buddhas can know that all phenomena lack intrinsic existence. I don't know whether it's real or not. So, as long as you have the afflictions, you meditate emptiness. But once you have clear or eliminated the afflictions, then if you do not need to practice emptiness. So, but I think since you get used to it or get familiar with it, you have to practice, continue with the practice of emptiness. Like the arahats, once they have eliminated the afflictions, so since they have done the work of eliminating the afflicted emotions, so now they are in a rest form. So just in peace. So after even though they do not, once the afflicted emotion is eliminated by practicing or by meditating on the emptiness, so after that, they do not meditate on the emptiness in order to eliminate the afflicted emotions, but of course, in order to eliminate the obscuration to attain the omniscious mind, they have to meditate on the emptiness again. Sarvakas and Pratigya Buddhas and Buddhas meditate on that view for as long as their afflicted afflictions remain. So His Holiness refers to this verse, sentence. When their afflictions are extinguished, they are satisfied and do not persist in meditation. Hence, they are unable to eliminate the cognitive obscurations. Bodhisattva is not content with mere liberation from cyclic existence through the mere extinction of afflictions, seek Buddhahood for the sake of all living beings. Hence, they meditate so as to utterly extinguish cognitive obscurations. Thus, they meditate for a very long time and are drawn with the limitless collections of merit and wisdom. Accordingly, while the remedy that purges the seat of both obscuration is the way of emptiness, as explained above, because of the limited duration of their meditation, Sarvakas and Pratigyas Buddhas can eliminate only afflicted obscurations. They do not eliminate cognitive obscurations. For example, the very same knowledge of the lack of self is a remedy for both the objects which are eliminated on the path of seeing and the objects which are eliminated on the path of meditation. Page number 323. Although even Sarvakas and Pratigya Buddhas see the same condition of dependent arising, they still lack a full and complete cultivation of the lack of self and phenomena. They have only a means to eliminate the behavioral afflictions of their three realms. Thus, what other madhyamikas consider a conception of self and phenomena, this master considers afflicted ignorance. Even though Sarvakas and Pratigya Buddhas meditate on the lack of self and phenomena to the point of utterly eliminating afflicted ignorance, they lack a complete meditation on the lack of self and phenomena. These treatments should be understood as I have explained them both here and above. What are cognitive obscurations in this system? Certain latent propensities are firmly set in the mind stream through its being beginlessly suffused with strong attachment to things regarded as intrinsically existent. These latent propensities give rise to errors of dualistic appearance, so that things appear to be intrinsically existent when they are not. These errors are cognitive obscurations, as Chandrakriti says in explanation of the Middle Way commentary. Sarvakas, Pratigya Buddhas, and Bodhisattvas who have eliminated afflicted ignorance see composite phenomena as like something that is merely existent. For example, a reflection. For them, because they lack the inflated sense of true existence, composite phenomena have fabricated natures and are not truths. These fabrications deceive children. For others, they are mere conventions, sins like illusions and such. They are just dependent arising. Also, because so His Holiness refers to whether this meditative equipoise mind have the appearance of truthfulness. And His Holiness says it's not clear whether we have to refer it to the meditative equipoise of Buddha or the other arahats. Bodhisattvas who have eliminated afflicted ignorance refers to those who have attained the eighth level, because Chandrakriti's commentary on the 400 stanzas, as cited earlier, states that there are bodhisattvas who have attained forbearance regarding the teaching of non-production. Therefore, bodhisattvas and Hinayana arahats who have reached the eighth level have put an end to the creation of new latent propensities for errors of dualistic appearance. But since they have many long established latent propensities for dualistic appearance that are yet to be cleared away, this still must train for a long time. When they clear away these propensities, stopping all latent propensities for error, they become Buddhas. The noble Nagarjuna and his successors taught that Hinayana and Mahayana are alike in their views of the definite meaning. This implies two marvelous certainties. After you have developed certainty that there is no way to attain even mere freedom from cyclical existence. Here I see the middle stanza. Going to that most beautiful mountain, that lot of mountains called Vulture Peak, shaking the universe in six directions, and magically filling 100 pure lands with light. So here, when we speak about the beneficial qualities of the first level bodhisattvas, that they have the potential to move the land of the world in six different ways, and all the other attainments is, they have a relation here. And through such practicing, through such attainments, of course, they will be able to clear the focal objects, or clear the way ignorance look at the object. The sage gave forth from his magnificent throat the great mother from whom all noble children are born, the incomparably eloquent perfection of wisdom, the heart of both sutra and mantra paths. Nagarjuna, the hero who had been prefaced, gave a precise commentary on it in the best of all treatises. That incomparable explanation, as famous as the sun, known as the Magnificent Fundamental Treatise. So the Fundamental Treatise text composed by Nagarjuna is very important, and each chapter has their own unique contents. Normally when I teach other, and also when I read myself the Fundamental Treatise, first I read the 26th chapter, then 18th chapter, then I read the 24th chapter. And then after that I read 22nd chapter. So then it's very, very helpful with the same, with the right kind of order. The treatise by Concurrential Buddha Balita explains it well, and he explains well. Was well understood by Chandakriti, whose fine treatise comments on it extensively, clarifying its votes and its meaning. Chandakriti's clear words and his commentary text is when page number 325, using words that are easy to understand, I have explained their stainless system, how it is the dependently arising objects and agent. This is the sensor that I use to quote and hear the collections of the Sangha, to whom who have understand or who have studied about the Madhyamika texts. My friends who study the profound Madhyamika texts, although it is hard for you to possess the Tibetan arising. When we make a difference between the name and the object, so when you speak about the meaning of the certain object and that it doesn't have a natural existence, then it is kind of surprising to us. Then even though it does not have its own existence, then but based on it, we have to establish the concepts of arising and production and everything. So even though it's very hard, but we have to refer to it as the truthfulness which has been teach the highest Madhyamika teachings. Cause and effect within the absence of intrinsic existence, it is better to take the approach of saying, such is the Madhyamika system. Otherwise, you will not be able to escape the fallacies that you have stated to others and will find yourself drawn to a non-system. In that case, you must continue to study. The treatise of Noble Nagarjuna and his followers give very good explanation of the way to search out the correct view and are, for the sake of concurrent teaching, remaining for a long time. So, again, we go back to middle and lumbrim. Which is the outline that we have read yesterday. On page number 285, rejecting an objection. This is very important. If the Buddha's exalted wisdom, knowing the mode of being a phenomena, finds ultimate truths, then how about the following statement from the explanation of Chandakriti's commentary on the middle way? Is such a nature not invisible? Therefore, how do they perceive it? That is indeed true. However, it is said that they perceive it by means of non-perception. It explains that not to perceive anything at all is to perceive suchness. As a source for that, Chandakriti quotes an explanation that ultimate truths are beyond even the objects of omniscient exalted wisdom. He also explained that at the level of Buddhahood, the movement of the mind and mental factors have has permanently stopped, and at that time of the Ten Powers, when the Buddha does not perceive aggregates and so forth, he knows the phenomena. How are you not contradicting these explanations? This is 15 points. They perceive by means of non-perception does not refer to not seeing any objects at all. Rather, it points out that if these objects observed due to the cataract of ignorance existed in reality. And at the Buddhahood level, when they perceive the things, the nature of the reality, the reality of that phenomena is being perceived by the Buddha. Rather, it points out that if this object observed due to the cataract of ignorance existed in reality, they will have to be observed by uncontaminated exalted wisdom of an Arya's meditative echo voice. So even from the Pramana text, it explains to the phenomena to be negative and positive. So this is in relation to here. Thus, it also says in the verse summary of the perfection of wisdom in 8 Sutra, 8,000 lines, those who don't see forms and also don't see feelings, don't see discriminations and do not see intentions, do not see consciousness, nor mind, nor intellect, see the Dharma thus the Tathagata teaches. Sentient beings see space and put that into words. Through that way in which space is seen instigated this. That's the Dharma is seen, the Tathagata teaches through other analogies. Seeing cannot be expressed. Like when the space, the empty nature of space appeared to us, the space appeared just as being, to not have the touch and all this kind of formatting. But other than that, there is not another solid way of appearing the sky or the space to us. What is not seen are said to be five aggregates, and what is seen is the truth. That is the meaning of suchness, just as in the statement, he who sees interdependence sees the truth. More specifically, in the analogy, space is the mere elimination of obstructive, tangled objects and seeing or realizing. It is like not seeing the obscuring, obstructive objects of negation, which would be observable if they were present. What is seen is space, and what are not seen are obscuring obstructions. The last two lines negate that suchness is seen the way you see blue rather than in accordance with the analogy. The statement that the five aggregates are not seen indicates that in the perspective of suchness perceived by uncontaminated meditative equipoise, phenomena are not seen. In the sutra on engaging in the true truth, it says, Son of the Gods, ultimate truths are beyond all objects, up to an inclining, including objects of omniscient exalted wisdom, possessing the supreme of aspects. They are not like what is expressed by. It is an ultimate truth. It explains that ultimate truths are not seen in accordance with appearance to the mind of object and subject as separate when you say it is an ultimate truth. Therefore, the quotation of a source for the difference of dualistic appearance rather than for the non-realization of the ultimate by Buddha. In the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the middle way, it also says, without touching produced things, he realizes suchness by making manifest their nature only. That is why he is called Buddha. In the perspective of perceiving suchness with Buddha's exalted wisdom, knowing the mode, reality only is said to be realized without touching that which depends on other. The moment of the mind and mental factors coming to an end means that when suchness is actualized, the moment of conceptual thought comes to an end. It does not indicate that mind or mental factors do not exist. In clear words, it says, if conceptual thought is moment of the mind, suchness is non-conceptual, for it is free from it, as is set for in the sutra. So, once we attain the Buddhahood, so in the Buddhahood, actually, there is not much difference in the moment of the primary and secondary mental factors, but it doesn't mean that there are no secondary mental factors there. Apart from that, the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the middle way establishes with an accompanying first source that if that nature did not exist, the Bodhisattvas will pointlessly undergo hardships for the sake of realizing it. One may well ask, what is their nature? That which is unfabricated about them and that which does not depend on anything else, their own entity that is realized by a consciousness free from the cataract of ignorance. Whoever wonders whether or not it exists, If it did not exist, then for what purpose will Bodhisattvas cultivate the path of perfections? Why would Bodhisattvas undertake the hundreds of hardships in order to realize the reality? And as a source for that, child of the lineage, if the ultimate did not exist, pure content will be meaningless, and it would be pointless for Tathagatas to come forth. Since the ultimate exists, Bodhisattvas are called those skilled in the ultimate. If ultimate truth did not exist, it would be pointless to engage in contact for the sake of purity or final nirvana. Disciples will not be able to realize it. It will be pointless for Buddha to come to the world in order to make them realize it. And the great children of the victors will not be skilled in ultimate truth. This is thus the sutra establishing that ultimate truth exists is quoted, page number 288. Therefore, it is simply wrong to say that the great master's system propounds that ultimate truths are not objects of real knowledge and that the exalted wisdom realizing suchness does not exist in an Arya's meditative equipoise. Furthermore, it says in the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the middle way, therefore it is posited from the imputation that suchness is realized, but actually it is not this something, it is known by something else, because neither the knower nor the object of knowledge has arisen. The first point means not to posit the realization of suchness, taking exalted wisdom and suchness separately as object and subject, is to posit it merely in perspective of conventional consciousness rather than in the perspective of that exalted wisdom. The knower has not arisen means that with respect to its object, which has not inherently arisen, is like water poured into water. As for the statement, since mind and mental factors do not operate with respect to suchness, the object of exalted wisdom, it is actualized only by body. The object to be actualized is suchness. The subject exalted wisdom is that which actualizes it, and the complete enjoyment body is the agent of actualization. That is knower. The manner in which it is thereby actualized is by way of stopping conceptual activity of minds and mental factors, as explained earlier. From the explanation in the commentary, it is understood that the body by means of which suchness is actualized is in the nature of peace because it is free from minds and mental factors. So the Vaibhishika schools does not believe in the perception as having an aspect, and Sautantrika and others believe the mind or consciousness as having an aspect. But the scientists believes that when we look at the object of a thing, the object gives a kind of impression or an aspect towards the mental or the mind, and the mind then, through that, the mind perceives an object. Therefore, the varieties of objects must appear to the exalted knowers of varieties. And since it is not knowledge without aspects, as far as this system is concerned, yet the varieties of appearing objects are both what is unpolluted by predispositions of ignorance, such as the major and minor marks of a Buddha, and that which is polluted by the predispositions of ignorance, such as impure, inanimated, and animated world. As for the first of these, it will be meaningless if they come to an end at the Buddha level, whereas the latter come to an end at the level because their causes have come to an end. The mode of appearance is as follows. When a Buddha's major and minor marks appear to a person which is not abandoned ignorance, they are not established by way of their own character, but still appear to be. The reason for this is not that those objects arise due to the predispositions of ignorance. Rather, they appear like they're due to the subject's pollution by the predispositions of ignorance. This is not because they appear to that subject merely from the perspective of appearing that way to other persons, but because they appear that way from its own perspective. Forms, sounds, and the like objects that are not established by way of their own character, but still appear that way to someone who has not abandoned ignorance. So the major and the minor sense of body, actually they are the purified form of the Buddha state, but in themselves also there is a debate of whether they are also diluted by the ignorance and the affected emotions or not. So this may have to be referred to the causality nature of those things. They do not appear from a Buddha's own perspective, independently of their appearing that way to others. Therefore, a Buddha knows forms and the like which are not inherently established but still appear to be. Yet it is from the perspective of their appearing that way to the ignorant. Independently of their appearing that way to those persons from a Buddha's own perspective, he would not know them in the manner of their appearing that way. Hence, there is no sense that he is received by appearances because they do not appear from pollution existing within the exalted wisdom, but due to the essential point that exalted wisdom necessarily knows all objects of knowledge. In 63 senses of reasoning, it also says those who are skilled with respect to things see impermanent things, deceptive phenomena, matter of empty and selfless. They see them as what is referred to as void. In the commentary on this, it says that those who have completed the deeds perceive things in that way. Thus it says in the two truths, omniscient knowers directly perceive all that which arises dependently, devoid of imputed entities, just as it appears. They are said to perceive all varieties directly and vividly. Furthermore, when consciousness and objects of knowledge and the self are not perceived, since signs do not appear to them, they do not arise, for they firmly abide. What is being explained is that omniscient knowers never arise from concentration in which dualistic appearance has been completely pacified. To someone who does not understand the modes of both explanations correctly, it may seem contradictory to assert both and not just one of the two, but there is no contradiction. The exalted wisdom perceiving suchness and the exalted wisdom perceiving the varieties of one entity, but that does not in the least contradict the fact that in relation to individual objects it becomes the two. So first the tea offering. Page number 290, divisions of the ultimate truths. This is 11 points. When ultimate truths are divided, it is in accordance with the explanation of Chandrakriti's commentary on the middle way, which serves for 16 emptinesses in the case that emptiness is divided in detail. For in the case of an intermediate division, the emptiness of things, non-things, self-entity, and other entity. And two, if it is abridged, the selflessness of persons and phenomena. Other texts set forth two actual emptiness and a concordant ultimates. In illumination of the middle way, it says non-production accords with the ultimate is therefore called an ultimate, but actually it is not because in actuality the ultimate is beyond all elaborations. And in ornament for the middle way, it also says since it accords with the ultimate, this is called an ultimate. If it really were, it would be free from all hosts of elaborations. In the two truths, it is stated similarly, and in the auto commentary on the two truths as well as the ornament for the mind, the sutras, it is explained that negation of ultimate existent production and the like is conventionally existent. With respect to the meaning of those treatments, many earlier masters differentiate two ultimate truths, specific and unspecific ones. They assert that the emptiness which negates ultimate production and so forth with regard to form and the like is the former. An imputed ultimate truth with the characteristics of a conventional truth, and that the latter cannot be made the object of any mind whatsoever, so that it is not an object of knowledge. Since that is not the meaning of those texts, they should be explained like this. The object reality must be indeed be taken as an ultimate, but the subject of reasoning consciousness is also often explained as such. The true truth, it says. Since it is without deception, our reasoning consciousness is an ultimate. It is just as stated in Illumination of the Middle Way as well. Prepositions such as ultimately, there is no production whatsoever, are also asserted to mean this. All consciousness is arisen from correct hearing, thinking, and meditating on unmistaken objects and therefore called ultimate because their objects are more superior. Of the two types of reasoning consciousness, the non-conceptual exalted wisdom of an Arya's meditative ecobias is without conceptions, whereas the reasoning consciousness of comprehending suchness based on science is conceptual and so forth. Therefore, the meaning of the text is not that explanation of two ultimates should be applied to objective ultimates only without applying them to subjects. In this regard, the first is an actual ultimate because in engaging in suchness, it is able simultaneously to eliminate the elaboration of true existence and dualistic appearance with respect to its object. That is also what is meant by beyond all elaboration. So, when we refer to as non-being intrinsic existence, it explains about dependent origination. A conceptual reasoning consciousness is able to negate the elaboration of all existence with respect to its object. However, it cannot eliminate the elaboration of dualistic appearance. Therefore, it is an ultimate that echoes and expects with supermittent ultimate, as it is explained in the beginning of Insight Wisdom. So the detail is coming here. It is necessary to explain two modes also with respect to the ultimate of objects, the negation of ultimate production, and so forth for forms and the like. For reasoning non-conceptual consciousness, that emptiness of an object is an actual ultimate always free from the two elaborations. For reason conceptual consciousness, on the other hand, it is not an actual ultimate always free from the two elaborations because it is only free truth. So except for some minds, for those whose perspective all the elaborations of dualistic appearance are gone, the emptiness of true existence cannot be free from all elaborations. Therefore, the meaning of the text is not that if something is an ultimate truth, it must be free from all elaborations of dualistic appearance. Page number 292. Therefore, this is not at all the assertion of Master Chandravakita, his spiritual son Kamalashila, and Master Hari Bhatra. As for the elimination of elaborations that are object of negation with regard to appearances, a distinction is made between the elimination and entertainment elimination. None of the great mathematics accept that the latter, the mere object comprehended by an inferential consciousness, is an ultimate truth. The explanation of their presentations in my extensive learning should be understood in detail along these lines. In the course of explaining the negative of production and so forth as a concordant ultimate truth, Janagarbha says in auto-commentary on the true foods, two truths, others hold it to be only real, therefore also has the meaning of and. In fact, if analyzed with reasoning, it is only conventional. Why? Since the object to be negative does not exist, it is clear that in reality, its negative does not exist. He is saying that others, Chittamatrans, assert that emptiness negating a self or phenomena in the basis of negation is established in reality, while his own system teaches that it is negative is not established in reality. Therefore, the explanation that a negative of ultimate production and so forth is conventional means that it exists conventionally rather than indicating that it is conventionality. In the same commentary, it also says, since real production and the like does not appear when a thing appears, it is a wrong conventionality. Likewise, the negative of real production and the like is a wrong conventionality. When the thing, the basis of negation appears, it does not appear. The answer to that, it is not that it does not appear because it is not different from the entity of the thing. The explanation that whenever something like blue appears, its appearance of true existence also appears, does not imply that a mere elimination, the negative of true existence, appears to the eye consciousness. Rather, it implies an affirming negative. Therefore, something like that has the characteristics of a conventionality, yet it is not contradictory for an emptiness, the mere elimination of the true existence, to be an ultimate truth. Ornament for the Middle explains that although the negative of ultimate production and the like is included among real conventionalities, it is a concordant ultimate because it accords with the ultimate. As for the ultimate, it says that the entire wave of elaboration, such as the existence and non-existence of things, has been abandoned. As for the wave of elaborations, it says in auto commentary on the two truths, it is not empty but not non-empty, non-existence or non-existence, neither produced nor non-produced, such is what Bhagavan taught. And why is that? It is without elaborations. Suchness is free from the entire way of conceptions. Second outline, indication that the number of the two truths is definite. This is 3 points. If a given basis is positively set off as a false, deceptive object, it is necessarily eliminated as being a non-deceptive object. Therefore, non-deceptive and deceptive are mutually exclusive. Their presence is contradictory. Since they pervade all objects of knowledge in a mutually exclusive manner, they also exclude a third group. For that reason, you should note that with respect to the objects of knowledge, the enumeration as the two truths is definite. In the meaning of Father and Son Sutra, it says, in this manner, the Tathagata realizes the two truths, conventional and ultimate. Objects of knowledge are also exhausted in these conventional and ultimate truths. Thus, all objects of knowledge are said to be exhausted in the two truths, in noble concentration, definitely showing suchness. The enumeration as the two truths is also clearly set forth. Everything is a convention or likewise an ultimate. A third truth whatsoever does not exist. It is said, if you know the division between the two truths, you will not be confused about the words of the sage, whereas if you do not know it, you will not know the essence of his teachings. Moreover, you need to know it in accordance with how the protector Nagarjuna settled it. In commentary on the middle way, it says, so division of special insight, back to Lambrim Chemo. Chapter number 25, Insight Requires Analysis. Classifications of Insight. Kamala Shila's second stages of meditation serves for these requisites. For insight, reliance on an excellent being, genuinely pursuing excellent sub-study of explanations of reality, and appropriate reflections. By relying upon these three, you will discover the view that understanding of these two selflessness and cultivate insight. What insights should we cultivate? Here, our immediate and primary concern is not the insights of the elevated stages. We are mainly setting forth the insights that you cultivate while you are an ordinary being. For an ordinary being, complete insight is the cultivation of the fourfold, the threefold and the sixfold insight. The fourfold insight refers to differentiation and so forth, as stated in the sutra unraveling the intended meaning. Differentiation observes the diversity of the conventional phenomena. Full differentiation observes the real nature of phenomena. The first is of two types, thorough examination and thorough analysis, and the second of these types, examination and analysis. Examination and analysis are distinguished according to whether the object is coarse or subtle. Asanga Sarvaka level says, what is a fourfold insight? It is this. Using the serenity within his mind, a monk differentiates, fully differentiates, fully examines, and fully analyzes phenomena. How does he differentiate? He differentiates by way of their diversity, by the objects of meditation they purify analysis. The objects of meditation of the learned and the objects of meditation that purify afflictions. He fully differentiates through analyzing the real nature of those three types of object. Full examination occurs when he uses conceptual attention endowed with those two kinds of wisdom to apprehend the distinguishing signs of those three types of object. When he analyzes them correctly, it is full analysis. The same four paths of the insight are set forth in Asanga's compendium of knowledge, the identification of them in Ratnakarasan. This instruction for the perfection of wisdom also agrees with the Sarvaka levels. Regarding the threefold insight, the sutra unraveling the intended meaning says, Bhagavan, how many types of insight are there? Maitreya, there are three types, that which arises from science, that which arises from thorough searching, and that which arises from analytical discrimination. What is insight which arises from science? It is insight that attends only to a conceptual image within the spirit of concentration. What is insight which arises from thorough searching? It is insight that attends to features which are not well understood by previous wisdom consciousnesses, bearing upon the given object so that those features may be well understood. What is insight which arises from analytical discrimination? It is insight that attends to features that were well understood by earlier wisdom consciousness is bearing upon the given object so that you may feel the genuine bliss of liberation. Regarding this, Asanga Sarvaka level says that those at the stage of Ecobias may attend to a teaching they have studied and memorized or to personal instruction. This is attention, but it is not contemplation, nor is it consideration, evaluation, or examination. It is involved only in the science. As you move from contemplation through to examination, you are engaged in thorough searching. To have exact analytical discrimination of what has been thus determined constitute engaging in analytical discrimination of that for which you have thoroughly searched. Those three are the three doors of insight. To summarize, in the first you might, for example, observe the meaning of selflessness and attend to its signs, but you do not do much to come to conclusion. In the second, you come to a conclusion in order to determine what you have not previously determined. In the third, you analyze this before a meaning that you have already determined. Page number 329, same page, the last paragraph. A yogi's understanding of the six just presented is of three types. The meaning of the terms express the diversity of the objects of knowledge and the actual nature of objects of knowledge. The first of the six kinds of searching for meanings, falls within things, and searching for specific characteristics fall within the second type, the diversity of the object of knowledge. Searching for general characteristics and searching for remaining three of those six fall within the third type, the actual nature of objects of knowledge. Asanga Sarvaka level says, this is the observation of three doors of insight and the six categories within the basis. In brief, this fully encompasses all types of insight. This means those that are explained there in the Sarvaka levels all types of insight. Furthermore, the doorways to the four insights that we explained first are three types of insight, that which is arisen from just the science, etc. It is said you enter from through searching with the six ways of searching from the point of view of those three doorways. So it seems the three doorways and the six ways of searching are included within the previous fourfold division. Asanga Sarvaka level states that the attention of tight focus, etc., as said before, explained above, a comment about serenity and insight. Hence, insight also is these four attentions. Therefore, Ratna Krasanthi's instruction for the perfection of wisdom says, thus completing the cultivation of fourfold insight frees you from the bondage of rebirth in the miserable realms. Completing the cultivation of ninefold serenity frees you from the bondage of science. There are a great many texts that say the same thing. Hence, insight is cultivated via the four, differentiation and so forth, as they are indicated in the sutta unraveling the intended meaning. Serenity is cultivated via the nine states of mind, which stabilize your attention without any discursive movement from object to object. How to cultivate insight? So how many pages left now? This section is two parts, the refutation of other systems and the presentation of our own system. The refutation of other systems, this section is four parts. Opponent's position, one does not find any view, any understanding of selflessness. Rather, one meditates on the meaning of how things exist by holding the mind in a state that lacks any thought. This is because the way that things exist, emptiness cannot be identified in terms of what it is or is not. Therefore, setting the mind in that way brings it into accordance with the way things exist. For with no object existing at all in the face of emptiness, the mind does not apprehend anything. Is it that these meditators for whom no objects exist at all first understand that objects do not exist and then must set their minds accordingly in a state of not apprehending anything at all? Or is it that they do not think that objects do not exist, but instead think that objects' ontological status can never be established, and so consider meditation on its ontological status to occur when you go into a state of suspension in which your mind does not apprehend anything at all? If it is the first, it contradicts your assertion that they do not find the view, because you assert that the non-existence of everything is a definite view. According to us, such a position fails to restrict the object that reasoning refutes, No matter what might be asserted, you regard it as contradicted by reason and then take this to mean that there is nothing whatsoever that can be identified, since this constitutes a view that mistakenly denies what in fact does exist. Stabilizing your mind on such a view is not meditation on genuine emptiness, as I have explained at length above. If you analyze this phenomena using reasoning that analyzes the way they exist, that reasoning will not establish the essence of any of these things and non-things. So perhaps considering the fact that phenomena are ultimately free from all elaborations, you are claiming that a person who is meditating doesn't know that, but rather stabilizes his or her mind in that way, without identifying anything, and that this way of meditating accords with that lack of elaboration of phenomena. It is most observed to claim that this is a meditation on emptiness, for none of the sensory consciousnesses think this is this and this is not this. Hence, they will also all be meditations on the ontological status of phenomena, because they would be in accord with the ontological status of their objects. As explained before, there are a great many absurd consequences of such a position, such as the consequence that the meditative serenity of non-Buddhists, in which there is no thought whatsoever, will be meditation on the emptiness of everything. Furthermore, if you claim that it is enough to have some person other than the meditator recognize the concordance between the ontological status of the object and the way the meditator's mind is set, then it will be impossible to avoid the consequence that a non-Buddhist will meditate on emptiness. This is not the case, because here the person first recognizes the concordance of the two and then stabilizes the mind. Since the recognition of such a concordance is the discovery of the view, this contradicts your assertion that one does not understand the view but meditates on emptiness by simply stabilizing his or her mind without thinking of anything. All conceptual thoughts, no matter what one thinks about, bind one in cyclic existence. Therefore, setting the mind in a non-conceptual state of suspension is a liberating path. I refuted this at great length earlier. If this is your position, you should not attribute even the slightest fault to the system of Hashang. Kamala Shila's third stages of meditation says, some say that virtuous and non-virtuous karma are produced by conceptions in your mind, and through this living beings experience results such as high status in cyclic existence and continue to remove in cyclic existence. Those who think nothing and do nothing will be fully liberated from cyclic existence. Therefore, they do not think about anything when they meditate and they perform no virtuous deeds. Page number 333. This refers to the position of Hashang. This passage clearly sets forth how it completely abandons the Mahayana, and while it may be that this is what Hashang asserts, you yourself should recognize this position. We are not like that because we practice generosity. If it is the case that Hashang and you must be distinguished only in terms of practices such as the deeds of generosity, then this indicates that you and Hashang are alike in meditating on the definitive view. Otherwise, it will be fitting that you also distinguish yourself from him on the issue of concentration that does not think about anything at all. Furthermore, if all conceptual thoughts whatsoever bind one in cyclic existence, then do you seek liberation from cyclic existence? If so, then in as much as giving gifts and maintaining ethics must involve conceptual thought, what purpose is there in performing them? I have already explained this point at length. Therefore, if you assert that all thoughts whatsoever serve to be bind one in cyclic existence, then you might as well adopt the position of Hashang. One who takes your position will be settled with a lot of contradictions. Also, some who follow this line of thought entertain the following view. If one does much analysis of an object that has been conceived to have signs of two selves and thereby stops grasping by the subject that apprehends such an object, this is to eliminate elaborations from the outset like a dog chasing after a ball. But to hold the mind without distraction from the outset, is to eliminate all elaborations from within. By this very act, one prevents the mind from scattering to those objects in which signs would be apprehended, like a dog grabbing the ball right from the hand that is about to throw it. Hence, those who train in scriptures and reasoning that determine the view are devotees of mere conventional words. Page number 334. This veiled misconception dispenses the scriptures of the Buddha and with all the texts of scholars, such as the six ornaments, for it is they who strive only to determine the import of scripture and reason. Furthermore, after you carefully analyze how your mind conceives of science of the two selves and what the object of ignorance is like, genuine scripture and reason must tolerates a deep false bit of error by bringing about the certainty that things do not exist, they are not conceived by the ignorant. I haven't read the bag again. It may be that when you merely hold your mind without finding any such certainty, it does not scatter to objects such as the two selves. But this does not constitute an understanding of the meaning of the two selflessnesses. If it did, then it will mostly absurd follow that. So actually, we have to read from 332 again. The quotation from the Kamalashila's third stage of meditation. In the middle, His Holiness is not read it. So I will continue from here. The path of the Bodhisattvas, in brief, is twofold. What are the two? Method and wisdom. The sutra of showing the Tathagata's inconceivable secret says, page number 333, all the paths of Bodhisattvas are included in these two, method and wisdom. Because of this, abandoning the Mayana creates a great obstacle on the path. Therefore, they abandon the Mayana due to minimal study. They consider their own view to be supreme. They do not respect the learned. They do not know the way taught in the Tathagata scriptures. After they have ruined themselves, they ruin others. Their words are contaminated by the poison of contradicting scriptures and reason. The learned who seek what is good should leave them at a great distance like a poisoned food. This refers to the position of Bhashang. This passage clearly says for how it completely abandons the Mahayana, and while it may be that this is what Bhashang asserts, you yourself should recognize this position. Objection. We are not like that because we practice generosity. Reply. If it is the case that Hashang and you must be distinguished only in terms of practices such as deeds of generosity, then this indicates that you and Hashang are alike in meditating on the definitive view. Otherwise, it will be fitting that you also distinguish yourself from him on the issue of concentration that does not think about anything at all. Furthermore, if all conceptual thoughts whatsoever bind one in cyclical existence, then do you seek liberation from cyclical existence? If so, then inasmuch as giving gifts and maintaining ethics must involve conceptual thought, what purpose is there in performing them? Page number 333, same, the last paragraph. Also, some who follow this line of thought entertain the following view. If one does much analysis of an object that has been conceived to have signs of two selves and thereby stops the grasping by the subject that apprehends such an object, this is to eliminate the elaborations from the outset like a dog chasing after a ball. But to hold the mind without distraction from the outset is to eliminate all elaborations from within. By this very act, one prevents the mind from scattering to those objects in which signs will be apprehended, like a dog grabbing the ball right from the hand that is about to throw it. Hence, those who train in scriptures and reasoning that determine the view are devotees of mere conventional words. This will misconception, page number 334. So this is already read. Page number 334, last paragraph. Therefore, when you are frightened about mistaking a rope for a snake, you have to stop the suffering of fear and error by developing certain knowledge that the coiled thing is a rope rather than a snake. Likewise, you are mistaken in thinking that two selves exist, and this mistake creates the sufferings of cyclical existence. But decisive scripture and reasoning bring certainty that the object of the conception of the self does not exist, and you understand that the conception of self is a mistake. Through then growing accustomed to this fact, you overcome that misconception. When you stop that misconception, you overcome all the sufferings of cyclical existence which it created. Therefore, this is the reason that the collections of Madhyamika arguments and other such works refute objects by analyzing them. Aryadeva's 400 stanzas says, when you see that objects have no self, the cease of cyclical existence will cease. Chandrakriti's commentary on the middle way says, there will be conception if you accept the existence of real things. We have already fully analyzed how it is that real things do not exist. He says that conceptions which are extreme views arise when such misconceptions hold that real things exist. So he gives many ways of analyzing how the objects of these misconceptions do not exist. Chandrakirti's commentary on the Middle Way also says, having understood that the self is the object of this ignorance, yogis put an end to the self. The Lord of Reasoning says, without negating the object of this conception of self, it is impossible to eliminate it. In reaction to good qualities and faults, there is attachment, hostility, and so forth. You eliminate them by not seeing their objects as real, rather than by purifying the external object of attachment. There are many such treatments. Some say that all conceptual thought of any sort binds you to cyclical existence, and thus all thoughts cease when you meditate on emptiness. This has to be analyzed. For ordinary beings who meditate on emptiness is emptiness. The meaning of selflessness, manifest or hidden. If this is the former, then those persons will be noble beings because they perceive the meaning of selflessness. If you say that it is not contradictory for someone to be an ordinary being and yet to perceive the meaning of selflessness, then we will say that it is not contradictory for a person for whom the meaning of selflessness is hidden to be a noble being, and for the two cases are completely similar. Page number 336. So I think he's La Diridala. So we will end here, and I think the remaining portion will be easily completed tomorrow. So is there anything in the Lamrim Timburvela? Middle length Lamrim? Middle length Lamrim, 294. Divisions of Special Insight. Page number 294. Once you gain the view realizing the two types of selflessness, having attended to the prerequisite of special insight as explained before, you should cultivate special insight. Now, how many types of special insight are there? Here, not the special insights of exalted levels, but the special insight you should cultivate while still an ordinary being will mainly be taught. This is 3 points. If you carry out an exhaustive division of these special insights, they are the special insights of the four natures, the three doors and the six search modes. This is 3 points. The four are thorough differentiation and so forth taught in the sutra, unraveling the intended meaning. In this regard, thorough differentiation observes the varieties. Exactingly, thorough differentiation observes the mode. The first has two types, full investigation and full analysis. The second has two types, investigation and analysis. They differentiate coarse and subtle objects. The identification of those four is set forth in Savaka levels, instructions on the perfection of wisdom and other scriptures. The three doors arisen from a sign, arisen from thorough searching, and arisen from individual investigation are stated in the sutra unraveling the intended meaning. To illustrate them with respect to the meaning of selflessness, for example, this three are identified as follows. The first observes the selflessness already as certain and attends to its signs but does not settle much itself. The second settles the meaning for the sake of ascertaining that which has not been ascertained before. The third carries out an analysis as was done before of the meaning already ascertained. This is 3 points. The six search modes carry out a thorough research of meanings, things, characteristics, signs, time, as well as reasoning, and having sought them, also individually investigate them. With regard to those six, the research of meaning is the research. The meaning of this word is this. The research of things is research. This is an internal thing. This is an external thing. There are two search modes of characteristics. This is a specific characteristics. That is a general characteristics. And it is common. It is uncommon. The research of science is a research in terms of faults and disadvantages, the black side, and in terms of positive qualities and benefits, the white side. The research of time is research in the past, such and such occurred. In the future, such and such will occur. At present, such and such is occurring. The research of reasoning is of four types. The reasoning of dependence is that occurrence of effect depends on causes and conditions. It is also a reasoning in terms of conventional. So I will end here. By the merits accumulated by this, may the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa and teachings of Buddha expand to flourish and expand to all part of the world. Sojourner. Except that no. So tomorrow afternoon, after lunch, So tomorrow after lunch is a very important announcement for all the Westerners. Tomorrow after lunch, all the Westerners will have an audience with His Holiness. So you all request to stay inside the prayer hall. I repeat once again a very important announcement for all the Westerners. Westerners, all foreigners, all foreigners are requested to stay tomorrow after lunch in the prayer hall. There will be an audience with His Holiness for all the foreigners. Westerners and Asians all. Thank you. Sejene jave damba yure senjo je damba rin chin cho je ma ja cham ja nyam ba je be cho de ne ni je chen bi ra che bo pen de 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 se wa che bo seje jave me jong de le 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 do chan zo lam je sa tu be tun je tu je je ma de se je. When I strive to properly achieve the Supreme Vehicle through the 10 deeds of the teaching, may I be accompanied always by those who have power, and may an ocean of good fortune pervade all directions. I have an announcement again. His Holiness will meet tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon, with the foreigners who have been attending the teachings at the main prayer hall of Debong Losaling Monastery. Please, therefore, assemble at the hall latest by 1 p.m. tomorrow. I repeat once again, His Holiness will have an audience with all the foreigners, Westerners and Easterners, Tuesday afternoon tomorrow, at the main prayer hall of Debong Losaling Monastery. So please, therefore, assemble at the hall latest by 1 p.m. Thank you. Prashe Nibong Jebe Ninji, Mizin Jebe Sona Landur, Yanda Chamse Zave Bela Jurene Nindo Nabedi. At the prayer of the words of truth, beneficent masters of an ocean of limitless good qualities, those gone to the bliss of the three times, your children and disciples, looking upon destitute migrators like your only child, please pay attention to my true words of wisdom. In short, may the good fruit of any extensive prayer to fully protect the land of snows, made by the powerful protector, cherishing in the presence of Buddhas and their children, appear soon here and now. By the interdependence of the profound suchness of appearance and emptiness, by the power of three sublimes, compassion and the force of truths, may the by the power of truth of the infallible action and reason, may our prayer of truth be fulfilled soon and without obstacle. So I will announce once again, so tomorrow at 1 p.m., all the foreigners, Westerners and Easterners will have an audience with His Holiness in the main prayer hall of Debong Losaling. So please, if your friends have not listened to this, please tell your older friends. Thank you.